Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in the world of marketing. Now, today we are diving into, we're diving deep into the art of B2B demand generation with the incredible Ray Cornell. If you're in B2B marketing and have ever wondered how to connect with your ideal customers in ways that really drive that long-term value, this is the episode for you. We are breaking down the psychology approaches, the psychological approaches to really creating marketing strategies that actually resonate with your audience, build lasting demand, and boost your brand reputation. Now, Ray is the CEO of and strategic marketing consultant at Cornell Content Marketing. Her approach really combines her background in psychology with marketing strategies that genuinely connect with B2B buyers. Through her own method, the Elite Method, we break it down in the episode, my friend. She's helped numerous businesses understand and really tap into the buyer psychology, leading them to transform their brands into thought leaders. Now, Ray explains why most businesses get stuck in short-term lead generation tactics that don't really yield these long-term results that we want. And we really discuss how you can flip the script by focusing on the psychology of your ideal customers. Together, we get to explore how to deeply understand buyer personas, create value at the top of the funnel, and ensure your sales and marketing are in perfect alignment. If you've been struggling to nurture qualified leads, this episode will provide actionable insights to build a demand generation engine that powers your business for the long haul. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing.
Welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I am excited to be diving in to B2B demand generation strategies with you today. So welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is my bread and butter, so I'm excited. I'm going to try and hold on to the nerd in me and not go off on too many tangents here.
Oh, no, please, let's nerd out. My listeners know I'm a total nerd when it comes to marketing and demand gen, especially. I think so many nuances. Before we get too deep, though, I'd love for the audience to get to know you a little bit. So I have my starter questions. My first one is, what was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't, what would you consider your first marketing role?
Yeah, my very first marketing role was, I was actually working as a website developer and a website content writer / Jane of all trades for the university website for the school I did my undergrad program at. And I ended up getting 7 different jobs on campus. 6 of those were web dev related for all the different departments around the campus.
My goodness, way to start deep into the web area of it. Now that's where you started. What is your current role? What do you do now?
Yeah, so now I'm the CEO of Cornell Content Marketing, and in working with our clients, my primary role is as the demand generation strategist.
Love it. And tell me, what do you love about what you do? But also be mentally prepared, because with the good is the bad. I also want to know, what, if anything, could I pluck out of your day to make it perfect? So let's start with the love of it. What do you love about what you currently do?
I love, and you know, it's funny, I listened to your episode with Brett Townsend, and I think he and I would be great friends, because my what I love is very similar to his, which is really understanding humans. And my background, I have degrees in psychology and criminology. So my background is actually in human behavior and understanding why people do what they do and how they think and how they make decisions and how they can actually implement change in their lives, which is an extraordinarily hard thing to do. Yeah. And so in marketing, I love the part of my job where I get to layer psychology onto the marketing strategies and make sure that we're really tailoring everything that we are doing to humans to create a positive human experience rather than one that feels icky or high pressure or manipulative or anything like that.
Absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of people underestimate the amount of empathy that's involved in marketing strategy. Pretty sure people think we just make bumper stickers, you know, and really great taglines. But you really do have to put yourself in your audience's shoes and get to understand like what their feelings are. It's why we also structure personas, right? Like help me understand who is going to be reading this. Where are they going to be reading it? How, and it almost sounds kind of cheesy to say it, but like you're trying to get them to take action, and to take action means that you have to make them feel something, right? Exactly. And sometimes it can be good and sometimes it can be bad, but either way, they're going to take an action. So I think your psychology degree must come into less the crime stuff, although that would be great for, you know, a Dateline listening. But I would imagine your degree in psychology just helps you immensely with really, especially in the content space. Now that's what you love.
Yeah.
What could I pluck out?
So with any marketing agency, with any marketing strategy, there has to be some elements of trends. And in particular, there are certain trends that I don't love, like social media and the emergence of a new social media platform. It seems every 8 months or so, there's some thing. And I am just, maybe I'm the black sheep in the marketing world, but I do not like social media. I know it's a necessary evil, and I know there are positive ways to spin on it, but that is my least favorite part of what I do.
Now, would it be crafting content for social, or just the fact that we have to even play in that space of social media?
The latter. I think, you know, creating content for social and putting together social media strategies, I actually really enjoy that part. But there's this idealistic idea of what I would love for social media to really be, and then there's what it actually is. So I think the thing that I don't enjoy about social media is that it's taken on a life of its own, and that life is not a great influence. It would be like if we looked at all of our friends, and one of those friends was Facebook and another one was Instagram. Those would probably be the ones that we go, ugh, they're calling me. I really don't want to answer. Like, I know, like, she's the one who always has the greatest, you know, up-to-date information, and she's the one who always gets invited to the parties, but she just makes me feel so awful about myself when I'm around her. I don't really want to take that invite for this weekend, or, you know, so it's like they're the negative influences in our lives, and yet people are so drawn to them and in many cases addicted to them. So I'm kind of on this mission to evolve what social media could be. And LinkedIn is one of those platforms that I think has a lot of potential to go good. Whereas some of these other platforms I think could, you know, peter out and society would be better for it.
Well, and the fact that we're going to talk about just kind of B2B, I feel like is the bread and butter of LinkedIn itself. Absolutely. And the other platforms are so secondary for it. Definitely part of it, but I think like from a social media perspective, they all serve a purpose. And I like that you like the strategy part of it, because I also think like from a business perspective, that is the part that's fun. Like, all right, how can I use what this tool is really good at to extend my message versus feeling like you personally have to be part of it. I think I really lack a social presence, even though I am in marketing and I am on social, but not on social to necessarily post about my life and, like, you know, be influenced by it. Although I will say I'm a TikTok scroller, admittedly. Well,
increasingly, that's the way that social media is going, where people go on there to consume others' content, but they're not posting their own content.
Yes. So
it's becoming a very different relationship with these platforms than what the platforms originally intended, which means that they're becoming increasingly more commercial as opposed to peer-to-peer.
That is so true. I also think it's an interesting challenge for a business to see how they can best leverage social media to tell a story, because it's almost like you can't tell, well, not almost like you can't tell a full story on social media. Everything has to be in like 60-second clips at the very least. So how do you capture their attention? How do you ensure that they come back? And how do you ensure that you're telling them what you need to tell them if just in case they don't come back? You know, it's an interesting challenge, and I'm glad that I don't just fully focus on social media, but I do love the fact that that's what you would pluck out of it. Now, yes. We just finished talking about that, and then you mentioned it, you know, being a trend. How are you keeping up to date with trends? Do you listen to podcasts? Is it books? Is it newsletters? You just follow people.
So a big part of what I do is SEO. Because Google has ingrained itself in the human behavior as the default go-to for answers to solutions. There's really no embarrassment factor with Google, which is great. It's not like someone has, let's say someone has a embarrassing issue that they want to find a solution to, whether that's in their personal life or their professional life. Maybe they're not achieving certain things that they are responsible for. If they were to go to a peer or a colleague or even a friend, there's that fear of judgment. Whereas if they go to Google, there is no judgment. There are only answers. And so a lot of what I do is based on SEO, search terms, search trends. So I really love Neil Patel. He puts out great email newsletters about SEO. He really is fantastic at demystifying the Google algorithm and breaking it down into action items, as opposed to just this jargon heavy text that we get in the Google updates. And then also, I just like keeping up to date with the news of what's going on in the world, because humans are so collectively influenced by the news and the media. And so if I can see patterns and see trends of what's going on and what's prevailing as top stories, that tells me a lot about the people that I might be trying to connect with on a client's behalf.
Are there new, well, this may be, I don't want to say it like a controversial question, but where are you getting the news that you're trying to follow to stay up to date on those trends? It's a really backwards way of me asking that. Because I know that is it a channel? Is it a YouTube channel? Is it like a television channel, right? Like, is it a streaming service? Like, where are you going to get that news to ensure that you're getting the right trends? Does that question make sense?
Yes. That's a very good question. And so when I'm thinking of trends in the sense of what's happening in the news, I actually want as neutral of information as possible, because I'm sure everyone listening to this can think of some very leaning one way or the other news outlets. And I actually prefer, there's a subscription service, it's $5 a month, called The New Paper. And it's great. It delivers news right to you as a text message, so I don't need to go onto any particular platform or subscribe to anything where I might be bombarded with something that I don't want to hear about or consume. And then these news stories, it is literally just the facts. And there are links to articles on all the different news platforms if you want to read more, but you just get the facts to kind of get a sense of what's going on in the world. What do I need to be aware of? And that way you can start using that as a barometer of what's the world facing right now.
Exactly. What's everyone starting to feel like? And how can I empathize with that as well too? This is why I love asking this question, because inevitably I learned something new. What did you say that service was called?
The New Paper.
The New Paper. Interesting. I love that. Well, I'm ready to dive into it. Let's talk a little marketing. Let's talk B2B marketing specifically. Now, I would love to kick this off. I told you before we hopped on here, I always like to ask definition questions just so that we lay the right foundation and the listeners know exactly what we're talking about. One of these things is defining what demand generation is. And the reason I want to do that is because I think that oftentimes demand gen and lead gen get confused with one another, right? So what are the differences between demand gen and lead generation?
Yes. Okay. So it's very nuanced and yet very simple at the same time. So the simple answer to this question is demand generation is the part of the marketing funnel that comes before lead generation. However, okay. the nuance is that a lot of companies and a lot of marketers jump right into lead generation, especially if you work in a company where you are responsible for the number of leads that get handed off to the sales team. And if yep. your organization is very sales driven, very revenue driven, then that's one of the only metrics that really matters to the people who are in the C-suite and making big decisions. However, if you focus only on lead generation, it's going to be like your marketing funnel is more like a sieve. It's more like a colander with a bunch of holes in it, where you're going to lose people all the way around because they see that your relationship is very transactional. Whereas you focus on demand generation. So, and let me clarify, lead generation is when really the motivation is you're trying to capture someone's contact information. You're trying to put leads into a CRM so that ideally you can nurture them, or in some cases you just hand them over to a sales team member and they try to convert that lead. That ends up with very poor results. The conversion rates are low. It's a lot of manual effort. It's an uphill battle. The alternative is to focus on demand generation. Demand generation is when you provide top of funnel value, content, information, and you meet people where they are already seeking out answers. So a huge portion of this is going to be Google. And if you can anticipate the struggles that people are having and put content in front of them in the places that they're looking, they find your content. And then they feel like they are taking the steps to come closer to you. They don't feel like they've been duped or had or gotcha'd. They don't feel like, oh yeah, I know I have to give up my contact information. And so I can anticipate some pretty aggressive sales calls or some pretty aggressive marketing emails after this to get this white paper or resource or tool or whatever the case may be. That's lead generation, and it starts you off on that rocky footing. Whereas if you focus on demand generation, you are building a foundation for a relationship where the customer or the prospect comes to you and they decide that they want what you have to offer. And with our method, the way that we approach it, it's such a detailed, guided journey for that prospect that there are no holes in the funnel, and you're getting your leads 80 to 90% pre-sold before they ever get into the hands of the sales team, which means conversions go way up.
I love that you said that, and I think that you articulated it so well by describing it as one being more of a transactional relationship, whether and against one that is more of a relationship, right? And I think in the world that we're living in now, people want to be, this is going to sound funny, but a little bit more wooed behind it. If they know that, because I do that all the time, I love content. So I'm always filling out and giving all sorts of information just so that I can get the content that I can then absorb later. And you're right, my expectation is I'm going to get into a nurture stream. It's going to be impersonal, but maybe also there's going to be content that supports this as well too, because I'm a marketer. So I'm assuming the marketer who set up this white paper, infographic, ebook, whatever it is that I've downloaded is thinking of all the other things that would support that as well too. And that's a little bit more like a relationship. I do wonder, and I intended to ask this question later on, but I think this is a perfect time because there is thought leadership content that I feel like in every organization that I've been in, people are always pushing out like, hey, we've got to do more thought leadership. We've got to do more thought leadership. And I love the idea of thought leadership because I do think that sits in kind of demand generation as well too. But I'd love your thoughts on the value of thought leadership and what that actually means, thought leadership content. What does that mean?
Yeah. So I think a lot of companies get intimidated by that phrase, thought leadership. I love the phrase because I think it implies you are paving the way for others to think differently. You are leading the way. But really, all thought leadership is explaining why you're different. So every single company likes to think of themselves as different from the competition. And one of my favorite parts of my job when I start working with a new company is asking them why. Why are you different? What sets you apart? And if I can just bottle what they say in response to that and put it on the shelves of Google and LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, they would never have any problem selling. But the problem is they have a hard time communicating their differences. And that's where they get tempted into selling, when really what thought leadership is, or rather, I should say, what thought leadership should be, is the innovators and the leaders of that company need to get passionate. They need to get riled up. They need to speak about the things that really matter. So, you know, for example, as we start talking about this stuff, I start getting riled up. I start getting excited, saying, this is what marketing should be, and this is what it should not be, and this is how it should make people feel, and this is how it should not make people feel. That's thought leadership. I'm trying to change the way that marketing is done and the way that companies approach marketing, and more importantly, the way that prospects and consumers experience marketing. That's all thought leadership is. It's nothing to be intimidated by. It's just really standing behind the things that you believe in and communicating them out there in order to change things for the better.
Ah, I love that. It's really hard to find people that can define thought leadership in a way, because it is in that way that you just have, because I think, like I said, oftentimes people throw out that word in the same way that they throw out the words demand gen and lead gen, when in reality, they just want bottom of funnel. Just give me the leads. Give me, give me, give me. I don't care about how we get them. Just give me the leads, because we've got to feed the funnel. And I think there's so much value in balancing, because there's a time and a place for everything. I think that you have to be able to create enough content to really nurture that demand that you created to the top, to get them to raise their hand to say yes, right? To say yes to, like, I do want to talk to someone because I've been going to you for XYZ because I'm in, I don't know, I was going to say the beauty space. And I don't know why I'm very much so not in the beauty space, but, you know, let's say I'm in the beauty space, right? Like, and to me, I'm putting out all of this content that you are searching for, right? Whether it's how to not have dry skin in the fall and how to apply fall colors in eyeshadow. And maybe there's techniques to shampooing my hair. If you become this resource that people continuously go to, that is that demand gen that you're talking about, right? And then when I see something come up, oh, maybe I do want to sign up for this newsletter because I'm searching for it anyways. And I seem to always go back to this place. So let me give them that information. And then that newsletter turns into maybe an offer that now all of a sudden I'm purchasing online. And I think so often people are so short-sighted in marketing, not marketers, just in general, right? Of like, I don't see how it works. And I think a part of it is also we're rushed and pressured to get the lead, to make the sale, so that like we can turn the lights on. That's a ton of pressure, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that that pressure and that over-prioritization of the short-term gains is what is ultimately the downfall of companies that find 6, 8, 10, 12 months later that their pipeline looks pretty meager. And if you instead prioritize the longer term strategy that will actually fill your pipeline in this J curve, where the more content you put out there over time, and content is usually something that you just have to pay for once and then it lives online for as long as you have it out there, it compounds and compounds and it builds your pipeline for longevity and sustainability, as opposed to short-term lead generation, where you're capturing those people. But as soon as they find out that their intentions of giving you their contact information are mismatched with the experience they're actually having with your brand, you're going to lose them, and then your pipeline diminishes.
Yes, absolutely. Now you have a strategy. or you guys, I should say, have a strategy called the Elite Method. And I'd love for you to break that down for the listeners, because as I was reading through it, if there was a little camera watching me, you'd see me saying yes, 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 with every single letter that you were going through. So can you break down what the Elite Method is?
Yes, absolutely. So the Elite Method, it's a process of really re-examining your marketing strategy in order to make sure that, just like we were just talking about, your pipeline and your sales team have the longevity they need to really build up a growth-focused and sustainable trajectory. And so the Elite Method, so ELITE, stands for, the first one is examine. You have to really take a good hard look at your strategy, your systems, your assets, everything that you have out there. And this is the area where I find if you can do everything in your marketing department in-house, fantastic. But this is the one place where you really need an outside expert to help you, because when you live inside the bottle, you can't see what's on the label. And so if you're looking at your own social media presence, web presence, email funnels, all of those things, you're biased because you're looking at everything through your brand colors glasses. Yeah. So that's where you really need to have outside input and take a very objective look at what are we actually portraying? Are we pushing the sales message too hard, or are we, you know, giving one picture of one particular service that we want to sell, but we're neglecting the other suite of services that would actually complement this and tell more of a story? You know, what is actually going on? So that's examine. The next step is learn. And this is where, you know, a lot of companies take the time to put together an ICP, an ideal client profile, ideal customer profile. And they do buyer personas, and that's great, but you really have to go deeper than that. So even though we're talking about B2B marketing, the decision makers are humans. They're individuals. They're not C's, they're not consumers, but they are the individuals that are having a very human internal experience when they're interacting with your content and your marketing methods. So you really need to understand the psychology of what's going on for them when they're interacting with you, as well as just in their day-to-day lives. What are the struggles that they're going through? What are the responsibilities that they have to deliver on to the people who are responsible for deciding if that person has a job or not? What are the pressures they're under? What are the frustrations that they feel? You really have to learn those things. And oftentimes, companies get blinders on and they say, oh, but that doesn't relate to what we do. That doesn't relate to our service or our SaaS tool or whatever the case may be. That doesn't matter. You need to fully understand who you're trying to reach. And I guarantee you there are more ways than you think to tie in those peripheral pains into the way that you have a solution that can make their lives easier. So yeah, go ahead.
Now, before you move on to because this I'm pretty passionate about. And I really wanted to unpack it when I read about it, because exactly what you said, it's the personas, and I want to understand what the pain points are. And to your point, oftentimes let's just say brands will be like, but that doesn't really pertain to us, but it does, because there is that psychology. What are some ways that you can help a company understand why they need to understand the pain points? And here's a perfect example. Right now, I'm going through, you know, I know that I need to understand my personas and what their challenges are, because to me, it informs my content strategy as well too. What's the best thing I can get to help with their challenge or answer the questions that it is that they have, right? It's part of how I do content mapping, the whole nine yards. And also for me, from a sales perspective, it helps me ensure that when the salesperson is out there, that they have the right material to aid in whatever it is that they're going to be doing. But I struggle with showing them, or maybe not showing, but articulating the value and the importance of that part. So what are your thoughts or advice on that?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So there's a company that we work with right now. I absolutely love this company. They have been such a dream to work with because they really have embraced this psychology perspective. And yeah. So they are a CPR and life-saving skills training platform, and they work with businesses to provide a system that allows them to train all of their employees. So if you think yeah. of, you know, schools, healthcare facilities, things like that, who all of their staff need to be trained in CPR and they need to have valid and up-to-date certifications. When we did this exercise of thinking through and really trying to empathize with that target person that we're trying to reach, one of the pains that we uncovered was that person who's an administrator of the health and safety program within that organization, that person is frustrated at the procrastination mm-hmm. of their coworkers. Their coworkers yeah. procrastinate on getting their CPR certification done, which puts pressure on the administrator who we want to talk to, because then that administrator who's responsible for keeping the entire organization in compliance is the one who's going to take the heat for the out-of-date certifications. And so you wouldn't think that a CPR training platform that provides certifications, training, maybe even a way to easily generate compliance reports and things like that would need to or want to speak to procrastination. But the fact yeah. is we've done a ton of content around procrastination and how to help your employees do the things that they need to do, but maybe don't want to do, or maybe just see as, you know, check boxes that they have to fulfill for the year, things like that, where there's no real motivation. And ultimately, yeah. what happens is when my clients use that content and employ it within their teams, not only are they alleviating a pain that they're dealing with on a daily basis, but also they now have an entire staff that's using my client's tool. And so therefore, yep. when it comes time for contract renewal and the client is telling my client, hey, you know, some excuse might be, well, our staff really aren't using it. We're not using your tool, so we're going to cancel. Yeah. Well, that doesn't happen anymore because we've beaten the problem of procrastination. And now there's more adoption of my client's solution. And so therefore, they're retaining that customer for far longer. So a lot of times we think that, oh yes, this going through this process of empathy and creating content around very peripheral or tangential things is not really going to drive the quote unquote bottom line. But yeah. it really does, because it's impacting not only conversion and making sure that your customers like and appreciate your brand, but now it's also affecting retention. And it's far cheaper to keep a customer than it is to gain a new one. So shouldn't that be a top priority?
Yes. I love this. I could probably talk about the L for the rest of the for the rest of the podcast. See, now I'm thinking content. Let's move on to I in your elite method.
Yeah, so I stands for implement your psychology driven marketing strategy. And this is where you really want to take all of those pieces that you've ideated and conceptualized and actually execute them. A lot of times there's, again, talking about pressure, there's this pressure to just get content out there, but I can't emphasize enough the importance of creating quality content over quantity. Even if you can only produce 2 long form articles per month, that is far better than 8 that may be superficial. They may feel like, you know, WikiHow articles where, oh yeah, I'm reading this and I'm not learning anything new. I already knew this. I already knew these things. You don't want to just create content that is based on online research, because then you're just going to, or AI for that matter, because then you're just going to end up spitting out what already exists. This is where you really have to infuse your learning of the person you're trying to connect with your company's thought leadership and how you're different and how you do things differently and want to improve upon the way that it's always been done. So implementing that with that focus on quality. Then the second E, or I'm sorry, I can't spell, T is transform.
That's okay. I was picking up. I was like, there's a second E?
There is. It's at the end.
At the end. At the end. It's at the end. We forgot T.
The T stands for transform. Transform your brand reputation. So the thing is, a lot of, like I said, a lot of these companies are putting out content that's very sales focused or very lead gen focused. Like, hey, here's a new white paper. Don't you want it? You're going to learn XYZ. Give us your contact information and we'll deliver it to you. That's all well and good. Like, don't stop doing that. You still want to be putting that content out. But you need that reputation boosting piece at the top of the funnel, which is that demand generation. And that's what is your reputation. Your reputation without that is, it's like this scary headless monster that's trying to grab in your pockets for all your cash. It's this awful experience for the people you're trying to connect with. Whereas if you focus on building a brand reputation where you are seen as the solution provider, your people have problems, you have solutions, why don't we be friends and team up? If that is really your priority, solving problems, then you should be happy and your marketing should be seen as a success if your company is viewed as that. The alternative that a lot of people get trapped in is thinking, oh no, marketing is going to feed names and email addresses into the CRM. And that's a very short-sighted view. So focusing on that brand reputation transformation has to be a top priority.
I couldn't agree more. Now we are to the E, the second E.
The second E, now that I can spell, yes. So this is where we get into really enhancing your sales and marketing with a feedback loop. So everything that we've talked about so far is building that first iteration of a demand generation machine. Once you've built that out, you're not done. It's a constant state of learning and improving. So one of the things that I love implementing with the clients I work with is a feedback loop between sales and marketing. Because these are two teams that, unfortunately, in some organizations are often pointing blame at one another. Sales is saying, oh, we don't have enough leads because of marketing. And marketing is saying, well, we're getting the leads, but sales isn't closing them. We don't want that rivalry. We want symbiosis. We want support. Really, the marketing team should be creating content and assets that help the sales team close. And the sales team should be symbiotically helping the marketing team by saying, look, I talked to 7 people over the last 3 days and they all said XYZ. They all used this particular word, or they're all suddenly very concerned about this. I'm noticing this new pattern. People are now, you know, very savvy about XYZ. And so maybe we should start addressing that earlier on. And when you create that feedback loop and sales informs marketing and marketing feeds the sales department, you end up with this upward spiral of higher and higher quality content and marketing mechanisms that funnel even more people into your organization.
I'm obsessed with every single letter of the Elite Method. And I love this idea of the feedback loop. I think it's challenging to implement because we're all, you know, I feel like when we talk about these types of things, especially in the conversations I have, it feels like all theory. It's a lot easy for me to sit here and say, hey, we should have that feedback loop. That totally makes sense, right? Like, I'm going to go implement that. And then there's another thing to actually put that into action and like find a way to have a good feedback loop between sales and marketing. I think I've actually interviewed a couple of people about this sales and marketing. I love that you called it a rivalry because it tends to be. And even if it's one where your departments get along, it is a bit of this pointing of the finger. So do you have any advice or tips for what a good feedback loop looks like? Is it meeting every week? Is it meeting every month, every quarter? Is it having a form that people fill out? Like, what have you seen be successful in this feedback loop portion?
Yeah, so there are a few things. If this is something brand new and this feels very uncomfortable and you do have that sales and marketing rivalry going on, one of the easiest ways to implement this is if your sales team's calls are recorded, which most organizations are doing that nowadays, you can have the marketing team transcribe and analyze and use AI for this. You know, there are tons of AI tools out there that can do this very quickly, but analyze those transcripts and find out what the key themes are. What are the things that the prospect is saying is why they're interested at this time, and what complaints they might have, what concerns do they have, why are they shopping and maybe are considering switching away from a competitor. You know, really mine that transcript for that information. And then set up, I like to do every other week calls between the sales and marketing team. That's not too frequent to where, you know, we're meeting every week and going, oh, nope, nothing new to discuss this week. But it's often enough to where you are staying close to one another and you're staying in this very collaborative, familiar relationship that opens the door for more candid conversations. And call attention to a few of the things that you found valuable in the sales call. And this is not a time to critique the salesperson. This is a time to say, hey, you had this sales call. Do you remember this? Because I found it fascinating that this person said XYZ. Are you noticing that in other conversations that you're having? Oftentimes, the easiest way to mend the relationship between sales and marketing is to show sales that they're valuable and that their input is really important to this whole process. And if you can start letting them know that what they think and what their opinions are really matter, because oftentimes they're working to hit quotas, they're trying to just deliver on the numbers. And so they're really only seen as a closer. But if you treat them like someone with valuable insights to contribute to a completely different department, then that can go a long way to building that relationship. Also, another thing I like to do is I always ask the sales team, what do you need? If you could wave a magic wand and have something that would make your life easier, what would that be? And I get some of the greatest creative ideas from them. Oh, it'd be great if we had a video about this, or if we had a PDF that was actually interactive, or can we create some kind of calculator? Yes, 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 we can do that. If that's going to help you do your job better, and you who are speaking directly to the people that we want to talk to are seeing that as something valuable to them, then absolutely we can create that for you. And then when you start giving them these things that they asked for and making their lives easier, it's a win-win.
I love that. Well, I could talk to you for hours, but we're, I know, well, because it is such a, I mean, like I have, we are two peas in a pod. These are the things that like I think about and I obsess over. And, you know, the sales aspect of it is always a big question mark. I've been in these positions where, you know, you do ask sales, what do you need? But I always find that they say the same thing. And they have really lofty goals because I think that they assume that like marketing just has, you know, bottomless tortilla chip basket of budget associated with like, sure. And everyone always wants a video, but that's very time consuming. I can't turn that around quickly. But I love the idea of just creating an environment that fosters collaboration so that one, everyone feels heard and seen, and you're kind of all working on the most important thing together versus, well, you didn't give me this and you know, everything in between that you could potentially get.
Right. And, you know, if there are sales teams that are asking, or you're asking them, what do you need? And they say, oh, I'm good, or I have everything I need, or I'm just going to keep using what I have. Well, then look at the other side of things. Okay, so if you have everything you need, then that must mean that it's working, right? So let's look at some of the deals that you've closed that we can highlight as case studies. Now, let me interview you about this deal and how did you get it to close? And ooh, it's interesting you used that tactic in this deal. Maybe we can highlight that in a, you know, this is how we got to know our prospect and solved their problem kind of way. So there are a lot of different ways to really start to strengthen that relationship. And once you're on that good footing, then that's when things just continue to get better and better and better.
I love that idea. Now, before I ask you another question that leads us down rabbit holes, I have my final question. This is going to turn into an hour and a half podcast. Yeah. My final question is, if you knew then what you know now, what is your marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
Yeah, I think it falls under both categories. My advice would be trust your gut. I mean, so many marketers, they don't trust their gut and they end up implementing marketing strategies where they're like, this feels kind of like if I were on the receiving end, I wouldn't want to see this. I wouldn't feel good about, you know, handing over my contact information or my money to a company that got me with this manipulative method or whatever the case may be. Then don't do it. Just trust your gut. Do the marketing that you would want to experience.
That is fantastic advice, both marketing and non-marketing advice, right? You have to be able to see, would you want to receive, how would you respond to this message as well too? Even if your product or service isn't one that you would, you're still a person. So you will always have the ability to provide that human factor when you're looking at things.
Yeah,
I can't thank you enough for coming on here and just sharing your insights, breaking down the elite method, regardless of how we spelled it. You know, I just have absolutely enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Katya.
Welcome back, my friends. I am ready to dive into it. So let's get started with the key takeaways. Key takeaway number one, make connections with your audience by using a bit of psychology. Now, during the conversation, Ray touched on how tapping into the psychology of your audience can transform your marketing by really getting into what drives people, their hopes, fears, and honestly, everyday challenges. It's this colloquialism of if you know, you know. It's what we want to do with our marketing. We want them to have that feeling. We do know. You can show that you truly understand your audience and influence behavior, which can also sound a little bit manipulative, but is it really? If your brand and product deliver on the pain point, it's exactly what your consumer, audience, community wants. Understanding, getting into the psychology of it, ultimately, it allows you to tap into emotions and motivations. And a great part of it is you get all of that and you don't even have to have a PhD to achieve it. Key takeaway number two, a relationship first approach is lead management. Now, shifting the marketing focus from capturing leads to understanding and building relationships with customers can really transform your business. And in the discussion of thought leadership content to aid in the development of building those relationships is something I really resonate with. Now, thought leadership is not being just that you know about something, but that you're sharing an expert view on it. And that expert view is something that your audience is looking for. The consistency of that content and adding value over time is really creating, building out those relationships. If they come to you for that and keep coming back and coming back for more, why wouldn't they take action and buy from you? They will, and they do, and they would. And even as I say this, while I do believe it, make no mistake, I know that it is not easy. It is tough to sell to the executive leadership the value of playing the long game of building those relationships. Although I think with B2B, there is more room for it because of the dollar value. And honestly, they tend to have longer sales cycles in some areas. Most obviously, this doesn't speak to all areas. Now, key takeaway number three. building the bridge between sales and marketing. Now, this is not the first time that this has come up in the podcast. The bridge that is needed between sales and marketing to prevent finger pointing and frustrations, I have felt it. I know my sales team and friends have felt it. Ray also, she came in hot with this opinion as well, but also talked about having a structured feedback loop. So came in hot, but definitely had a solution, this feedback loop. And in the approach discussed, it was about creating this unified front, not just exchanging of statuses and numbers. Because when sales and marketing really sync up effectively, not only are both teams more informed, campaigns are sharper, and customers can feel that. That feedback loop is hearing what the word on the street is and giving that word to the, not word to the street. Oh my God, I'm gonna start that part just one more time, okay, my friends? That feedback loop is hearing the word on the street from the sales team and giving that word on the street to marketing while marketing is sharing how we're going to get that word on the street. I know, you may have to slow that one down or really write it out. Either way, I feel like you're picking up what I'm putting down. Now, what did you take away from today's episode? I really want to hear about it. Let's keep this conversation going. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.